భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. Is it 23 on the board? Evam Navasatas? Okay. On this 27th day of October 2010 in Los Angeles, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Canto 6, Chapter 1, The History of the Life of Ajamil. Text number 23. Evam Nivasatas Tasya Lalyanasya Tatsutan Kalo Atyagan Mahan Rajan Ashtashityayusha Samaha Evam Nivasatas Tasya Lalayanasya Tatsutan Kalotigan Mahan Rajan Ashtashityayusha Samaha Evam Nivasatas Tasya Lalayanasya Tatsutan Kalotigan Mahan Rajan Ashtashityayusha Samaha Evam Navasatas Tasya Lalyanasya Tatsutan Kalotigan Mahan Rajan Ashtashityayusha Samaha. Evam Nivasatas Tasya. Ashtashityayushak Samaha. Go ahead. Evam Nivasatas Tasya. Lalayanasya Tatsutan Kalotigan Mahan Rajan Ashtashityayushak Samaha Evam Nivasatas Tasya Lalayanasya Tatsutan Evam Nivasatas Tasya Lalayanasya Tatsutam Ladies? Evam Nivasatas Tasya Lalayanasya Tatsutam Kalotigan Mahan Rajan Ashtashityayushak Samaha. No more ladies. Evam, in this way, Nivasataha, living, Tasya, of him, Ajamil, Lalayanasya, maintaining, Tat of her, the Shudrani, Sutan, sons, Kalaha, time, Atyagat, passed away, Mahan, a great amount, Rajan, O king, Ashtashitya, 88, Ayushaha, of the duration of life, Samaha. Years. Translation. My dear King, while he thus spent his time in abominable, sinful activities to maintain his family of many sons, 88 years of his life passed by. No purport. Tasya pravachyasat putra dashate sham tuyo vamaha balo narayano namna pitros cha dahito brisham. That old man Ajamio had 10 sons, of whom the youngest was a baby named Narayan. Since Narayan was the youngest of all the sons, he was naturally very dear to both his father and his mother. Since Narayan was the youngest of all the sons, he was naturally very dear to both his father and his mother. Purport. The word Prabhayasaha indicates Ajamil's sinfulness, because although he was 88 years old, he had a very young child. According to Vedic culture, one should leave home as soon as he has reached 50 years of age. One should not live at home and go on producing children. Sex life is allowed for 25 years, between the ages of 25 and 45, or at the most 50. After that, one should give up the habit of sex life and leave home as a vanaprastha, and then properly take sannyas. Ajamil, however, because of his association with a prostitute, lost all Brahminical culture and became most sinful, even in his so-called household life. Om jnana tamarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chakshu unmilatam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So this story of Ajamil is much beloved of all of the Vaishnavas. I remember when this was first revealed, when Prabhupada first wrote the sixth canto, when it came out, like many other of the other cantos, it caused like a sea change in ISKCON. There's a lot of new material and a lot of encouragement in this, because of course it deals with the power of the holy name. But just as Krishna is known to be expert, and expert in one context means able to do many things at one time, similarly this story, or this history rather, of Ajamil has many lessons in it. The one that Srila Prabhupada focuses on here, because he's just beginning the Shukadeva just beginning the account of Ajamil, is the need to control the sex life. Sex life, according to religious principles, is Krishna, according to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. But the whole idea is to control it. Prabhupada makes in a different place in the lecture, he explains how the things that are controlled means that they're bad for you. For instance, liquor. There's a liquor license, right? And there's an age when you can't drink below, right? It's 18 or some places 21. So the government wants to control it because it's bad for you. Yet people want to do it anyway. So there has to be some control. Otherwise, it can create havoc. In a society such as this, when they tried prohibition, it didn't work. They tried to stop it completely. So that we know the history. That was that just created a lot of money for the mafia, and people were drinking anyway. So there's a control. Similarly with sex life, sex is the greatest bondage in this material world. But it is a bondage. It is strong. It cannot be simply broken and prohibited. Then how would society go on? And people couldn't do it anyway. So the Vedic culture has various rules and regulations for religious sex life. And the basic idea is it's limited. That's the first thing. It's limited. As Prabhupada says, it's limited to age. Sex being the greatest attraction, one who is serious about getting out of this material world wants to have a period of time when there's no sex life and there's no attraction, and one can get free of that disease. It's said to be a disease of the soul. Kama Roga, described at the last verse of the Rasa Panchadhyaya, that those who vikriditam vadavaduditam to Vishnu, who properly hear this pastime of the rasa dance from the right source and describe it with great faith, in the right mentality, then they become free from the disease of lust, kama roga. So, by the disease, if it captures hold of you, then there is a proper means, a proper way of getting free of it. And in this case, it requires for those who are enter into the household life, then there's a certain time and there's a certain way of having this sex life so that it doesn't drag one down to degradation. Now, Ajamil clearly didn't do that. He's 88 years old and he has a little son. So he's having sex life as far as he can into his old age. And we see that in our own so-called civilized culture, that nobody is thinking, okay, it's time to give up sex life. Now I should become renounced. There's a great desperation to prolong it as far as possible. You know, let's take the Viagra, we'll take the Botox, somehow or other prolong it, which is totally degraded and sinful and leads to the lowest levels of consciousness. So Prabhupada is explaining how just the fact that he had this young son at this great age is indicative of his complete life of sin. Now we know that, and we will learn later when the account of Ajamil is reiterated, that he was born into a Brahmin family. He was very religious and pious, but due to bad association, he lost all his Brahminical culture and all of his piety. And he became degraded by associating with a prostitute. And he spent his life, as described in the previous verses, as you've heard. He gave trouble to others by arresting them, cheating them, in gambling, or just by directly plundering them. So he's accumulating piles of sin here, sinful activities, sinful reactions. That's the main thrust of this pastime, is that Ajamil became a great sinner due to his bad association. But he had this very good quality, fortunate quality, because of his upbringing, that he named at least his final son Narayan. And one could surmise, Prabhupada may say, that his other sons also, you know, he named after names of God. So this was his saving grace, as it were, as we'll read shortly, that in that final moment when the Yamadutas came, he called out with great desperation to his son. And because he had named his son Narayan, he's calling out Narayan. The name Narayan, once chanted, purifies him of all the sin. And this, we'll hear the debate between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas, and finally instructions of Yamaraj to his messengers, explaining the great purifying power of the holy name. So one of the other lessons that's clearly mentioned here is the all-important activity of association. Everything really comes from sangha. Sangat sanjayate kama. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes in the second chapter. According to our association, we develop our desires. And really, our consciousness is just a whole heap of desires, different kinds of desires. In Krishna consciousness, we are trying to purify those desires, not to suppress it and destroy desire, which is impossible. This is the idea of the Mayavadis. But to purify it. And if we associate with the modes of nature, those in the modes of nature, passion and ignorance, those who are sinful, will become like that. Sangat sanjayate kama. So everything really hinges on sangha. That's why Srila Prabhupada called it the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Society means association. When you come together, you associate with others for a specific purpose. And Srila Prabhupada, his great gift to us was his association, personally and through his media such as books, tapes, and his society and everything else. He's giving us his association, and since he's a pure, as Prabhupada would call it, a transparent via medium, we're associating with Krishna by associating with Prabhupada. And the other great, some of Prabhupada's great gifts, he's giving us the association of Krishna through his holy name, through his holy books, like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is also Krishna's words. And in every other way, now we're in this wonderful month of Kartik, or Damodar, and, you know, this prayer, or this wonderful song composed by Satyavrata Muni, it talks about, you know, what does a devotee really want? What do we want? And There he's saying that doesn't care about moksha. So this is another lesson of this pastime. Ajamil, the whole point here is that he got liberated. That's the first point. He was liberated from his sins. He was liberated from his attachment to this material world by chanting the holy name just once. But that wasn't the end of it, right? Then he needed to go to Bhadrak Ashram for further purification until he became a pure lover of Krishna and a pure devotee. But this idea of seeing our situation in this world as a result of our own previous activities, our own sinful activities, and that this is how we've come to this situation in the material body, in this material world, and that we need to somehow get rid of those sins so that we won't suffer. This is not the primary, ultimate goal of the Vaishnav, but for someone who is coming to devotional service, who is investigating this idea of self-realization, what is the real meaning of life, that this is an essential realization, is that we're suffering. Birth, old age, disease, and death. Why? Because of our previous karmic activity, sinful activity. And in order to get free of that, we have to get free of those sinful activities. So this purification is an essential initial motivation. And this is what Krishna promises at the end of Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Sarva dharmam parityaja mame kam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yasyami. I will free you from all sin-free actions. That's what's being talked about here. You remember the context. Shukadev Goswami had described at the end of the fifth canto the results of extreme sinful activity. All of those hellish punishments, you know, you must have heard them for several weeks and months, right? So that's meant to, like, scare us a little bit, right? And the natural result of a Vaishnav who hears this is that, well, how can one be freed from this? How can I be free, and how can I help free others? So Parikit, when he heard this, being a soft-hearted Vaishnava, said, what can people do in order to not have to suffer these grievous punishments, hair-raising punishments? And so Shukadevi kind of gave him a little test, right? First he said, well, I have to atone for the sins. And so this is karma kanda, you know, to do pious activities and in this way atone for the sin. But as, you know, the famous line is, Mandi Kundiva Shochavat, but this doesn't uproot the propensity to commit sin. And we see in our own world how when someone wants to get clean, say they call clean, right? It's a good word. Clean from some drug addiction or from alcohol addiction. What do they do? Well, I got to perform some austerities. I have to give it up, maybe go to a place, right, where go to AA, where others are also trying to do it, and there's a certain structure, and we get the spiritual strength to do it, right? But every alcoholic who has somehow gotten clean or is off the wagon, or on the wagon, I guess it would be called, for some time, knows that one little drink and they're finished, right? Just one drink, and at least it's two drinks, five drinks, and you're finished, or you've fallen back. So what happened there? Well, okay, you can, by atonement, austerity, by associating with others, you can give up the alcohol. But the desire is still there. And if you're in the wrong association, the wrong activity, that desire flames up, blazes up, and you've lost your position. And the other way is tapasa brahmacharya. Now this whole verse that he described at the beginning, this is jnana yoga, to really cultivate knowledge, and also involves austerity. But still it doesn't uproot the desire. And we see that, what is that? Prapan chikriyabhudya hari sambandhi vastunak. What is really yukta vairagya? We're talking about detachment here. We're talking about how to get free of our attachments, which are a result of sinful activities. That's part of it. That if one, the impersonalist vairagya, their idea, which is jnana yoga, ultimately, is called pogal vairagya, very weak, insufficient detachment. So, again, the roots or the roots of that sinful activity are not burned, are not finished, and they again come up. Inevitably, Aruhakuchena Parang Patandada Patang Tido Anadita Yushmarangriya. Without contacting Krishna, being averse to serving Krishna, even if one performs great austerities and rises up to the platform of Brahman, which is sinless, beyond that, still if they fall down because of the lack of purification. Their consciousness is not completely purified. Avishuddha buddhaya. So then, in order to illustrate the power of bhakti, and specifically chanting the holy name, Shukadeva Goswami then tells the story of Parikshit. The story of Ajamila. And so the first idea here is he's describing how contaminated, how sinful Ajamila actually was. He had lost his rabbinical qualifications, and he had a whole lifetime of sin. 88 years here. And so then we will see what happens is that he calls out this name, Narayan, and just from that one calling, in an offenseless way, because he wasn't thinking, oh, I'll continue my sins and chant. He was simply calling in desperation to his son. That purified him. And the Yamadutas, who were rightly confused, because he was a total sinner, he seemed to be a very good candidate for being dragged off and punished severely, they were prevented and from doing so. And we read all these lessons. So that's another lesson here, is the great power of purification of sin-free actions that bhakti yoga is. But ultimately, how we chant, we learn from the song and in many other places that we sing on the month of Damodar, that the devotee really ultimately doesn't care about liberation. Nadanang nadanang nasundadim kavitang vajagadisha kamahe mama janmani janmani shude bhavata bhakti rahoitiki tvayi. That Lord Chaitanya has told us is that we shouldn't approach Krishna for wealth, for followers, for even liberation. Mama janmani janmani shude. He's saying, let me, birth after birth, let me simply have devotion to you, which is not motivated by anything else except the desire to please you, and which is unbreakable. That comes in a different verse, but that's the same idea. That's the real motive of a devotee. And here we have this, it comes up actually three times in this song, Damodarashtika, this idea that I don't want liberation, I just want your darshan, I want your service. First is, varam deva moksham na mokshavading ma na chanyam vaneham vareshatapiha Idam te vapurnata gopala balam sadame manasyavarastam kimanyai. What's the use of anything else? I simply want to always see this gopala bala, this little baby pastimes of yours. Even liberation from this world, even going to Vaikuntha is not attractive to me. Let me just have this birth at moksha vadim. I don't want moksha, you know. And later on in the song he says again, I don't want moksha. So how does that develop? Well, what happens is that a devotee understands that liberation is simply a byproduct of devotional service. And the ananda, the bliss, the transcendental pleasure, unending and undiminishing, that comes from thinking about, from glorifying, from serving in all the nine different ways, Krishna, in his most delightful form, in Goloka Vrindavan, in Braj, completely overwhelms anything else, including fear. Now, the desire for moksha is really based on fear. And that fear is a healthy thing when we first come to devotional service. We have to fear Maya. Prabhupada said our disease in the world, we don't fear Maya enough. You know, and we should understand, janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. If we don't have a very sober and grave view of these four things, birth, old age, disease, and death, then what's going to be the impetus for our following the path of bhakti, following the path of any self-realization? You may become interested in it as like a dilettante, but you soon lose interest because you won't see the urgency of it. And the unlimited variety of sense gratifications, gross and subtle, will simply take you away. But if you understand, whoa, I'm being threatened by these things, you know. I see them all around me. I can't get away from them, you know. And you see the absurdity of wasting time in sense gratification. The pleasure that comes from sense gratification is our worst enemy. It's our worst enemy. It's the source of our misery. But that pleasure, you lose your intelligence. You lose your knowledge. Avritam gyanamitena, gyanino nityavainena. This enemy of material desire, lust, in all of its ramifications, covers our knowledge. So, these are basic points of Krishna consciousness in the Bhagavad Gita. It's all over the place. But it's not the end, it's the beginning. And that understanding, if we understand we're at the beginning, you know, is important to maintain so that we get, we can overcome the temptations that want to take us off the path, you see. So these kind of stories are so important. But at the same time, we should know, oh, the real devotee is Varam Deva Moksham, you know. Or as Bilba Mangal Thakur so beautifully says, Bhakti Strayi Stidatara Bhagavan Nidisad Daive Nanak Palati Divya Kishora Murti. That if someone is fixed in devotional service to you, Bhakti Strayi Stidatara, O Lord, Bhagavan Nidisad, then they'll get the fruit of that bhakti. And what is that? The Divya Kishora Murti. You yourself is the vision, the presence in the life of your divine adolescent form, Krishna. And as far as mukti is concerned, mukti svayam mukulitanjali sebhate sman dharmata kamakata yaksamiya pratiksha. That as for mukti, she's just waiting by the door to serve me like this. In other words, byproduct. Not the goal, but simply byproduct. And if whatever I need of dharma, artha, and kama, that will also be there. You see? Not as the goal. We don't come to Krishna before Rukmini Dwarkadish, please, I need $5,000 for this, for that, for this. That's not how we should come to Rukmini Dwarkadish. That's Kanishta. Yes, we have faith, but only on Krishna on the altar and only for some. That's Prakrita Bhakta, materialistic. No, we should come to Rukmini Dwarkadish, come to Radha Krishna and pray. Pashupala varinya nandano vadametang muharati he yuvam bhavatu panayobabe bhave bhavatore vipadambhujeshume. O Radha Krishna, children of the best of cowherd men, this single boon I beg from you again and yet again. In all the countless births my endless sins will make me meet, let all my love flow toward your luscious, lustrous lotus feet. That should be a prayer. Vadam deva moksham noi. So, ultimately, this story of Ajamil is very important for us because it really illustrates the potency of the holy name. This is the only way. Harinama, 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 Vakim. There's no other way, especially in this age, for purification, for advancement, for anything, but chanting the holy name of Krishna. And that is the great benediction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's given us this process of Sankirtan, Harinam Sankirtan. And he describes the progression in that first verse of Shikshastika. Cheto darpana marjanam bhava mahanda vagni nirvabhanam. The first line is all about liberation, right? The blazing fire of bhava, birth and death, is extinguished. First thing, by purification of the heart. And this is all auspicious for ourselves and for everyone else. It's like the soothing moonlight of the spreads the rays of the benediction moon, and that benediction moon is causing the white lotus of good fortune to unfurl its petals, right? For ourselves and for everyone else. And the knowledge of who we are, who is Krishna, what is that relationship, what is our own personal relationship with Krishna, that's all part of vidya. This chanting reveals all that, because it's already there. It's already in our heart, deep and buried down and within our heart. So it purifies, release. And then, anandam buddhivardhanam. You want ananda, you know, you want pleasure, but you're looking for it in all the wrong places. Sense gratification is not it. But this ananda of developing Krishna consciousness, being Krishna conscious, is ever expanding. Who ever heard of such a thing in the material world? Material pleasures are ever decreasing. They're simply, as Prahlad says, like a mrigatrishni. It's just a mirage. You want it, you want it, you want it, you think about it, you contemplate it, you get it, there's a little tickle, and then you think about it, and you forget having lost it. You know? A little pleasure and a lot of pain. That's material sense gratification. Let's go down to McDonald's. What's the problem? little pleasure, a lot of pain comes from that. Sex life, illicit sex. Do we need to count the ways how much suffering that causes? Personally and socially? How about Varna Sankara? It all comes from this illicit sex life. Everybody suffers from that. So, but Krishna consciousness, little pain, unending pleasure. You know, tapo divyam, little austerity, getting regulated, surrendering, you know, regulating one's life, chanting Hare Krishna, gradual purification. After all of the bursts that we've had of nonsense to be in this, have this wonderful boon, and the promise is, we can't even conceive of it. Unlimited, unending, ever expanding, ananda. So, where should we invest, right? Those who are wise, you invest. You're going to invest your time, invest your energy, invest your money in something that's going to give a return. So where can there be a greater return than in Krishna consciousness? Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Please, if there are any questions or comments, we can entertain them now. I'm trying to keep the schedule, as it says right here, 8:10. Try to follow the instructions. I'll read the verses translation again. Maybe that'll... My dear king, while he thus spent his time in abominable sinful activities to maintain his family of many sons, 88 years of his life passed by. That old man Ajamil had 10 sons, of whom the youngest was a baby named Narayan. Since Narayan was the youngest of all the sons, he was naturally very dear to both his father and his mother. Questions, comments? Yes, Mukunda.
Prabhu. Thank you very much. Very nice class. You have been emphasizing, and Srila Prabhupada also emphasizes throughout this passage, the fact that Ajamil was saved by dint of the fact that he had some good samskars. He was able to name his son Narayan, and undoubtedly he was not chanting the name of Narayan only once at the time of death, but he had chanted throughout his life, we can assume. So, and yet still, Ajamil had to go for further purification because of all of his, I guess he had accumulated some bad samskars as well. So if this is the example of someone who had, relatively speaking, good samskars, then what about those of us who don't?
Okay, I guess you heard that. Yes, Prabhupada makes the point also, thanks for reminding me, that he was chanting throughout his life these names. Narayan, and maybe some of his other sons were named, you know, Mukunda, Govinda, who knows. But certainly he had this Narayan son. So he was fortunate, and yet he had to go through what he went through here, we see. Well, the my understanding is that the special benediction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his sincere followers and their spread of the Sankirtan movement, even though most of us here in this room, some maybe were born into nice devotee families, certainly wasn't, we may have no good samskaras, at least no visible ones, nothing from this life, say. And yet, due to the mercy, due to the compassion of great devotees like Srila Prabhupada, who make an effort to go out to the most fallen, who may have no good qualities, and somehow or other entice them, you know, through association, through preaching, through prasadam, in the holy name, to begin the process of devotional service, then all bets are off, in a sense. Anybody who starts taking up this chanting, the purification is enormous. Devahuti glorifies her exalted son and his holy name in this verse. Says anybody, you know, even born in a family of dog eaters, which is, you know, the worst they could think of. But I've been thinking of this. Aren't cow eaters worse? I think so. Anyway, dog eaters, cow eaters, whatever it may be, very, very low. But somehow or other, if the holy name is dancing on the tip of their tongue, then they are considered to have performed all sacrifices in previous life, studied all the Vedas, bathed in all the holy places, etc. So, as Srila Prabhupada famously said once, I have made you good fortune. Because really you're talking about good fortune here, you know, good samskara. So we've come a long way, you know, just whatever we're doing, you know, how many rounds we're chanting, we should all be chanting at least 16 rounds, of course, and following the four regular principles. But even just having chanted one round, you know, is such a long, or such a great amount of purification that it really overwhelms everything else. Ajamil didn't have an ISKCON. You know, he was more or less at the mercy of his spiral downward. You know, he had embraced the prostitute, and with embracing the prostitute, he embraced the lower modes of nature. But as you mentioned, he had from his good samskaras the intelligence, good fortune to name his children after Narayan, after the Lord in many ways. So Prabhupada mentions, is it here or is it, I think, in Gajendra? There's this nice passage in Gajendra where Prabhupada is kind of humorous. If you recall how Gajendra, he was a great soul. Was it Indrajumna? I think Indrajumna, who had been cursed. The usual hazard of like offending a Brahmin, maybe unknowingly or something, whatever it was. So he loses that and he becomes Gajendra. And then in his moment of crisis, because this is the whole point, in moment of crisis here with Ajamil, he called out. So in his moment of crisis, finally Gajendra, you know, after 1,000 years, he started chanting these verses, right? And to the Lord, even though he didn't know exactly who he was addressing. And he was delivered. So Prabhupada says in the purport there, this is a good reason why we should memorize verses, why my disciples should memorize verses, because even if they're born as animals in their next life, they will remember these verses. So he suggests a few. Namaste, Narasimhaya, Chintamani prayers, you know. So, you know, we're hoping that we don't have to be born as animals. In other places, Prabhupada says that even a little devotional service will protect us from that. But the idea is that that whatever we do, In regards to, you know, following the principles that we've been given of devotional service, this will keep us purified and will create our good fortune. Our good fortune has been created. So I don't think we have to worry about that. Vijay Prabhu?
Hare Krishna, thank you for a very nice
sure.
class.
Sorry, I went a little long. Okay.
You mentioned how we get some good fortune, Srila Prabhupada creates our good fortune. So, but we distributed so many millions of books, and Prabhupada preached so much when he was here on the planet, but only a few were able to actually take it up. And Prabhupada mentions in one purport that anybody who takes the devotional service, this is due to his past activity of devotional service. So it seems like it's not just Prabhupada's good fortune, that there was something also in the past, thereby one is able to pick it up enthusiastically.
Yeah, both things are there. I mean, Prabhupada, you know, at one point he said, you know, all of you were sent by my Guru Maharaj. You're all associates of Lord Chaitanya. You know, at other times Prabhupada said, I have made your good fortune. You know, so both things could be there. To be really honest about it, many have taken it up and many have dropped away, you know. Not, what they have done is not lost, but their devotional activities are apparently covered. So, because really the critical factor is, let's maintain our desire to preach, desire to give this to others. Even though it sometimes seems like we're pushing the myth of Sisyphus, you know, pushing the rock up the hill and it's just falling down again. What progress is there? But when you take a longer look and you see over 40 years, and don't just look at, you know, America. You know, look at the world. Hare Krishna has become very famous. And also, I always like to think of India. You know, India is booming. You know, India is, and that's part of the world. This is a small world. The internet is everywhere. And the idea is that, yes, it seems like, yeah, millions of books have been distributed. Where are all the tens of thousands of devotees, you know, streaming into the temples? We have to take a longer view. I think we have to take a longer view and see what has happened in the 40 years over the whole world. Hare Krishna mantra is becoming very well known. Thousands of people chanting. Many, many thousands and ten thousands are actually regarding themselves as followers of Prabhupada. You know, so if you wanted some encouragement, get onto the prison ministry site, you know, and read some of the letters from these devotees in jail. It's absolutely amazing. Just from reading Prabhupada's books, you know, and through letters from Shyamapriya and her followers and Mukunda and the others, how sincere they are, you know. And so Krishna consciousness is spreading. It may not be spreading as fast as we want to see it or as smoothly. You know, it's up and down and so forth. Just as our own consciousness may be up and down. But Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. Krishna Sankirtan will be victorious. This is Lord Chaitanya's statement. Yes, Prabhu. Archita Prabhu. I think one yours and maybe...
Just on that note... Yesterday I got a call at the BBT. Middle-aged woman in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, got a Sri Ishapanishad and calls the BBT to find out what to do next, how to go forward. She really is interested. She wants to become a Hindu and what to do next. So she's not rushing to a temple. I mean, the address list is in every book. She could have just looked at the address list and, you know, gone to New York or Boston.
And if she got an old one, she would have had Krishna consciousness at home. Anyway, that's another
thing. But the point is a lot of people get these books and they want to practice at home. They're not necessarily looking to run into a temple. And so I gave her some instructions, told her we'd send her the catalog because she wants to get more books in. So it's happening. Like you said, it's not necessarily visible immediately, but the mass is building. And don't forget, this is not just for this life. This is how people take birth in the next life and become devotees. And people wonder, wow, this person's...
That's why I say take a long view. Yeah. And as things get you know, worse and worse due to this economic situation, people are going to be looking for solace. And there's nothing like Krishna consciousness provides solace. Vijay, let Suvas wanted to say something.
I think we shouldn't forget, historically speaking, if there is a country that takes up a particular religion, it's usually by the leadership of the country that really makes that particular faith or religion expand. And no matter where you go in the world, then America is prominently Christian. I mean, everyone has a Christian faith, Christian idea. So really, we should see that we're like a teeny minority. I mean, we are practically just a dot on the map itself. But just what Prabhupada's being able to accomplish, you said, in 40 years, without any real political backup, you know, it's incredible what Srila Prabhupada was able to accomplish. I think it's stunning. In terms of that, because how will you change America into Krishna consciousness without the political machine behind you and supporting you and giving you financial and all kinds of support?
Right.
If you go to India, the Krishna conscious movement is booming because, you know, a lot of the people
you got some
in
leaders,
the political
yeah.
arena believe in Krishna.
Right.
And they give all kinds of support.
That's a very good point, yeah. Mukunda, all right, one final comment, then we have to end. Sorry.
I just wanted to add to that if you look at the history of what's now Russia, the former Soviet Union, Krishna consciousness has exploded there. And there's been many, many, many devotees there. And there's not a whole lot of political backing. If anything, there's political opposition.
Yeah, it can come from below. There's several things that happen, but certainly, you know, when the king or the president becomes a supporter, it goes ballistic, as it were. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.